In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Robin and I are going to be talking about five high leverage areas bootstrappers should focus on. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 287. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us. The podcast helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome launching software products. Whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Rob?
Well, week's going pretty well. I had about 2.5 hours yesterday that I totally killed because of the way that Gmail forwarding works and the way that it's really smart. And it knows if like another Gmail account can send as a certain email address. And if you try to send from a Gmail account to itself as a different address, that it won't send the email. And I had like two or three Gmail accounts and I was trying to troubleshoot all of it. And it was just, you know, I won't go into the vast complexity of it, but it was this funny string of, I was like, man, these things are not forwarding. Google Apps doesn't work the way I thought it did. Like there was a certain forwarding setting that I had set and it just wasn't working. And 2.5 hours later, I finally realized, oh, it's because Gmail knows that the other Gmail account could send as that thing. And so therefore it wouldn't forward the email along. And by the time I had, you know, someone else in my office send the email and then it all worked, it was like 2.5 hours later. So it was kind of a bummer.
That sucks. You could have asked me. I would have told you that.
Yeah, well, I knew how it worked with one account, but it was that there were these three accounts that were linked in this chain. And to be honest, moving from DreamHost to Google Apps to manage our email has been a fairly seamless transition, aside from all the upfront work. But just not knowing the inner workings of how it's going to do some things and then having there was email that got lost, it instantly made me suspicious. I just hate being on new systems where like you don't quite know how everything operates and interacts. They aren't necessarily bugs, but they are like features or odd behaviors that you're
not. Yeah, they're little quirks.
They are. That's what it is, you know, just legacy of how they were built type thing.
Yeah, I've seen that myself. I think the way that I got around it was that what I did was I would send email and have it in like inside of Gmail, I would have it send through an external SMTP server that would then basically forward that email back.
And that didn't work. I did that.
Really?
Yeah, it's exactly that. That's why it took me 2.5 hours because I was like, there's no way it knows, but it did. It's crazy. There's much technical detail that doesn't make sense. The bottom line is I killed 2.5 hours and I should have just assumed that Gmail was smart because that's really what it is. I mean, if when I actually look at it, they built it pretty intelligently. I just didn't expect it to be kind of that knowledgeable of a separate Gmail account and that it would know who was sending as.
Yeah, I just don't understand why they prevent you from doing that to begin with.
I know.
Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I don't know why. Maybe there's some weird technical thing on the back end. And it might have been something that was early on. And then at this point, they're just like, well, it's not broken. So let's just not bother changing.
I also wonder if they're trying to keep infinite loops from happening, where like you forward from one account to another. And then if you were to forward back, it would infinite loop back and forth or something. This behavior would avoid that. And so that's part of why I think they might have done it.
I guess, but at the same time, those would be rules, not necessarily like an active send. If I literally send an email or if I send it, it should send it. It shouldn't matter what other rules and stuff are in place, mm-hmm. and they should have stuff in there. Like if they're smart enough to do that, they should be smart enough to detect whether or not there's going to be infinite loop of forwarding back and forth. It's six and one, half a dozen the other. It's like you can solve it in one or two different ways.
Perhaps, but I know that the forwarding can get really complicated and have like custom rules and all that stuff. So they would have to like evaluate those on both sides. That would actually be a lot more complicated, I think, than just having the flat. But do they want to waste their time on that, or do they want to like be shooting rockets in outer space?
Or making us all live till the end of time.
Exactly, that kind of stuff. How about you? What's going on this week?
I onboarded another customer this week, and I am unfortunately not going to make my deadline of having everybody on to Bluetick by the end of the month, but I am at least making steady progress to it, and the app is getting more and more solid each week that goes by. So my self-imposed deadline of having the app completed was back at the beginning of this month,
right.
and then my goal... Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it was completed, and it was largely functional, and we've spent the past several weeks cleaning up a lot of the rough edges and double-checking to verify certain things so that everything's working. And then anything that's not working, we're going in and fixing it more or less as I onboard people. Because initially it was just get at least one or two people onto the system, find out where they're stumbling. And basically I'm just kind of watching over people's shoulders as they're going through. And I watch them sign up for the app. I watch them configure everything. I watch them as they struggle through the interface and take notes about pretty much everything that they're doing so that way I can go back and I can log new cases and say, we need to fix this, or we need to move this over here, or make this more clear, or change this text so that there's any questions about how something works. And some of it's just very simple stuff that you wouldn't necessarily think of. And it's just adding some explanatory text is what will fix it, or changing the text on a button. All of that stuff is pretty simple to do. It's just a matter of knowing that you have to do it. So watching over their shoulder really helps with that.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, that's the benefits of being so hands-on in these early days. So you said you've onboarded another customer. What's your total customer count up to?
I'm up to 3, and I've got another one scheduled for this Friday.
Nice.
So it'll be up to 4, and that'll be, I'm trying to think, I don't actually don't know what my pre-orders is up to at this point. It's somewhere between like 16 and 20.
Nice.
I don't know exactly. Yeah, so that's kind of where things are at, and I'm hoping over the next couple of weeks I'll get everybody else onboarded and start working through the issues. I mean, we've already redesigned a bunch of the navigation to make it easier to use and easier to kind of hop through the screens and do what you need to do. And then a lot of the other stuff is just adding in little bits and features that people need. And one of the things that I really wanted to have operational on day one was Zapier integration. And the person I put on board yesterday, they were able to do that. We wired everything up, connected to a form on their website. It sent everything directly through, automatically added them to an email sequence and made it so that they could start sending those emails basically automatically. It was really kind of awesome to watch.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah, it's fun to get some real people using it. Have the people you onboarded actually started sending emails and are using it for production use?
Not yet. That will probably be next week. So right now they're just kind of going and putting it through its paces internally and testing it with just different test email accounts. And then I think next week, I know of at least one person who's going to start using it in a production capacity, assuming that everything goes well this week.
Cool. And are they on a trial basis where you're going to touch base and find out when they've got value and then you're going to charge them for the subsequent month, or is it a predetermined timeline in terms of trial length?
Yeah, it's not a predetermined timeline. It's essentially when I brought them on board, I had them give me a pre-order. I took their money and then said, look, I'll work with you through the onboarding process. And if the very first day you can say it's providing value, then great. Well, I'll apply a credit for however much you gave me. And then in X number of months, I will charge you again for that quote unquote first month of service, which is reality like 3 or 4 months out. But if you can't say that for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks, then we'll just keep working with each other until you get to the point where you can say it's providing value, and then we'll do that. So they've kind of paid already, but I'm not actively charging them more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
But I don't have a specific timeline. I mean, I would be disappointed if it took like 8 weeks for people to look at it and say, yes, I'm getting value out of this, because then it would mean that there were a lot of things that I got wrong, and I don't think that that's the case.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. That's how we did it with Drip as well. When we onboarded those first 10 or 11 early access users, I was just so high touch and so aware of what everybody was doing at that point that at a certain point I was like, man, they just sent a broadcast to 5,000 people and got this open rate. Like, I have a feeling they're getting some value out of this. So it was purely based on me just circling back every week and reviewing everybody's activity rather than having a predetermined trial length. And then I went and used that data to then inform how long should our trial be? Does it need to be 30? Can we do 14? And obviously we settled on 21-day trial. But at this point, learning and just getting people using the app is more important than the money, as long as the people are willing to pay you in the long term, because you want the right people using it, right? Who have money, who aren't going to be perpetual free users. So I think you're on the right track with that.
Yeah, and that was the purpose of taking that money up front. And it's more just to maintain an affirmation of commitment,
right,
than anything
it's
else.
It's a token, yeah. So if a listener is interested in seeing what you're up to, they can head to bluetick.io and guess they would sign up for the email list there, and you'll be in touch once stuff's ready.
Yep, that's right.
Cool. So how about today? What are we chatting about?
So today what we're going to talk about is different high leverage areas that bootstrappers should focus on. And I kind of came up with this idea because I've been personally buried with just tons of different things that need to be done. And what I realized was that I was kind of going down the rabbit hole in certain places. So I kind of took a step back and thought about what I should be doing versus where I'm spending my time. Because I track my time using Rescue Time, so I'm able to go back and see exactly what it is that I'm doing and how much and things like that. And it seemed like kind of an appropriate topic to talk about and to share with people. And I did a little bit of research when I was taking that step back. And so this is loosely based on an article from Fortune magazine, which we'll link up in the show notes, but it talked about five different ways that CEOs should spend their time.
And before we hit record, we talked a little bit about how really these five areas are aimed more at full-time bootstrappers who are trying to grow a business. So right now, if you're nights and weekends or you have something that's on autopilot, this probably isn't going to be as relevant. It's more for people who are going to be hiring some contractors, potentially employees at some point, and who are really thinking of building something that they want to grow and are investing in it. And you know, it's funny, I'm not sure that it needs to be full-time, but it's like if you're hitting it hard and you're investing time and money into it and are heading for growth, I think that this is going to be in line with what you should be focusing on.
Yeah, I think the other thing that factors into it is making sure that you're spending time in the right places and you're not overworking yourself. And I think that's a easy trap to fall into if you're doing something where it's just taking and consuming a ton of your time and you don't really have a lot of free time to do other things to kind of wind yourself down. And what I found was I was spending just vast amounts of time working on some of the stuff. And quite frankly, some of it I just didn't need to be doing. It was better left to other people. But at the same time, there's this core group of things that just needed to get done that I'm kind of the only person who could or should be doing those things. And it's just a matter of balancing those different things and making sure that not only do they get done, but I don't burn myself out in the process. So before we dive into these, one of the things that I wanted to point out is that I think that it's a mistake to think that as a small company, you can do everything right that the big companies get wrong. And I remember years ago when I started my own company, I looked around and said, oh, well, how are they still in business? How is it that they can sustain themselves when they do this laundry list of things wrong? And at the time, I remember promising myself I would never act like that and just drop things on the floor. And with time comes a little bit of wisdom, I suppose. And I realized since then that it's very difficult to not just drop some things. You can't always move everything forward. You're not always going to be able to pay attention to the smallest details, and there's going to be things that get dropped. And that kind of goes along with this particular podcast episode, because there's going to be places where you should be spending your time, and then there's other places where they're going to be lower priority. You're going to have to neglect them a little bit. So with that said, we're going to kind of dive into these five different areas. And the first one is strategic planning. And under the umbrella of strategic planning, this includes things like your business roadmaps, your product roadmaps, the vision of where the company is going and how it's going to get there. And along with those things, you have to have at least an idea of what it is that you're trying to accomplish and what the timelines associated with those are. Because if you don't plan those things out and figure out how you're going to get there, then it's going to be very difficult to achieve those goals.
There's a concept from the E-Myth where the author says that a technician thinks about today, the manager, who's one step up, thinks about this week, and the entrepreneur thinks about this month or this quarter. And that's where the strategic planning comes in. Like, you have to be thinking out 3 to 6 months and thinking about what features are going to need to be built, what marketing approaches you're going to need to take. Do you have the cash? Do you have the personnel, whether it's contractors or full-timers? And really where is the whole space headed if you're in a competitive area? How are you going to react to things that other people do? I mean, there's a lot to be thinking about in this kind of umbrella of strategic planning and vision, and no one else is going to do it. This is really a founder-level responsibility because everyone else is focused on getting stuff done day to day. And this is actually hard to do in the very early days when it's just you or you and one or two other people, because you are so focused. You are a technician and a manager and the entrepreneur. And those are the hardest days, in my opinion, because you're just trying to get the support tickets responded to and get the next feature built and get the next page of documentation written. But as you're able to fire yourself from some of those roles, meaning that you hire good people to take them over. So suddenly you're not responding to the support emails. You're not writing the KB articles. This is all stuff I was doing just 2.5 years ago as we launched Drip and I. I'm not doing any of that anymore. Once you do that, you find that you free up more mental space to start thinking strategically. And this is where you spend time taking in outside content, basically. Like, this is why I do listen to a lot of audiobooks and podcasts, and I keep up on what's going on in the email marketing space and marketing automation and, you know, marketing technology in general. And I have time to do that because I'm able to essentially delegate all the tasks that I used to do, kind of the technician and more hands-on stuff. And so you have to make a decision here. If you want to stay small as a one or two person and you want to keep writing code, that is totally cool. But you do need to fit some time in your week to do some strategic planning, even at that level. And then if you do plan on getting bigger and becoming, let's say, 5-10 employees, you will want to start to move back from some of the more hands-on roles.
And I think that's a difficult, you know, line to draw in the sand. And you alluded to it early on when you said that in the early days, you are acting as both the implementer and as the manager. And it's very easy to get sucked into all of the short-term stuff and ignore the longer-term stuff, thinking that, oh, it'll just sort itself out and you won't need to think about it, especially if you do really well on all the short-term stuff. And that's not the case. I mean, because there are definitely times where you need to take a step back and look up and look to figure out whether or not those short-term things that you're working on are even relevant. Do they even need to be done? And sometimes they just don't. Sometimes the things that you're doing short-term make absolutely no difference whatsoever. And it is better to leave them alone and walk away and essentially let them fall on the floor and do something else, because it makes more strategic sense to go do something else. The second high leverage area is to focus on communicating. And there's three different places where communicating is applicable. The first one is talking to your prospects. When you're talking to people who are looking at purchasing your product or using your product, they are going to give you an indication of where the market is headed and where things are trending. The second place where you should be communicating is with existing customers, because they're going to give you an indication of where they're at with their business and how you can better serve them in the future. Presumably, those customers are growing, and if you are able to grow your app and meet their needs in the future, then that means that your customer base and the relevance of your app to that customer base, whether they are small or as they are growing, is also going to increase. So it essentially increases the breadth of people that your app is applicable to and gives you essentially a wider market that you can tap into. And then the third place where communicating is really important is communicating with your team. And that is to essentially make sure that they understand the vision of the product, the business, and where the company's headed, how you intend to get there, and all the timeline things associated with it, the roadmaps, the goals, milestones, etc. They need to understand what the priorities are for the business. And if you can't communicate those things to them effectively in a way that they are going to understand and be able to relate to, then it's going to be very difficult to get them to all go in the same general direction. What you're going to end up with is a lot of people who are either going off into the weeds or working on things that are just simply not relevant. And you're going to get frustrated. It's very easy to assume that because you've been involved on all these conversations with customers and prospects and all the different people that you have working for you, that other people know those things. And that's definitely not the case, especially if they're sitting their heads down writing code and they're not talking to the customers. They're essentially relying on you to relay that information. And if you're not communicating it with them, how could they possibly know that information? So this is where communication with your team is just as important, if not more important, than communicating with your prospects and your customers.
Yeah, that third part is about communicating your vision, right? It's the vision of the company and where it's going. And like you said, what the timeline looks like. And I find that thinking out 90 days in a pretty concrete manner and kind of having a pretty set up roadmap of where we're going is a good place to start. Things change so quickly that past 90 days, for me, it's always murky. And I know as you get larger, if you're a 20-person company, you probably need a roadmap longer than that. So at this point, with Drip, we have 10 people working for us. A couple of them are part-time, but still a 90-day timeline has been plenty. And looking out beyond that, it gets a little murkier, but I do have like bulleted lists of where I want to see the product going. And what's interesting is Derek and I will talk about it and kind of come up with what's happening. And then we have a weekly team meeting where we're able to communicate that to everybody and give them an idea. And I feel like since everyone is doing their day-to-day job and they're busy just cranking out content or doing demos or cranking out new features, they aren't necessarily thinking about the higher level of like, what are we building? And that's where, as a founder, you need to kind of bring that up to the higher level and summarize it to people of like, did you guys notice that all we're doing right now is a bunch of UX stuff, or all we're doing is performance, or you know, we're building this big feature that's going to take 3 or 4 months, and kind of communicating it back to them in the way that you see it so that it can lend clarity to them and they don't just feel like they're kind of doing all these little tasks, but like there's a higher level strategy to it. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. And it doesn't need to be some big leadership rah-rah thing at all. It can just be getting feedback from everybody about what they're seeing, what they're hearing from customers, because assuming you're not the only person talking to customers, and then communicating back to them kind of the current vision for the company. So I think as you get bigger, like let's say you are a 30 or 40 person company, you know, you'd split these roles, and the person who's maybe hearing from prospects and customers would be like a CPO. I think the CEO needs to keep communicating to the team, because it's just so important to keep that ball rolling.
The third area Bootstrapper should focus on is researching and testing marketing channels, or at the very least, finding the ones that are working really well and then doubling down on them. And again, this goes back to what we had talked about very early on in the episode about how not every business needs to go through fast growth, or some of them just simply aren't capable of it. But if you are in that situation where you are trying to grow the business, what you're doing today may not get you to where you need to be or where you want to be. And some of these new sales channels are going to be very critical to growing your company. Another thing that you have to keep in mind is that not all of these channels that you're currently using are infinitely scalable. And in fact, some of them are just going to dry up or go away because they were not necessarily fads, but they were not sustainable channels. And that could be because the channel itself collapsed, or it could just be that you have grown enough to the point where the things that used to work in that particular channel simply aren't moving the needle for your business anymore. So as you get larger, a given channel may no longer work as well for you as it did in the past.
Yep. Especially, I'd say early on, until you have several employees, this is going to be your key driving factor, because finding good marketing people and someone who knows growth is just very, very hard, and they're very, very expensive. And they're just a handful who are going to be able to drive this like you will be able to. It's one of the most difficult roles to fill, I would say. And so definitely researching and testing marketing channels, at least getting to the point where they're working, then you could hand them off to someone else. But this is going to be a critical growth lever in the early days.
The fourth area is what I'm going to call moving the furniture. And this is kind of based loosely on an article that Joel Spolsky wrote a long time ago about the fact that what he saw was that the job of management was essentially to remove obstacles from the path of developers so that they could get their work done. And I think that this applies to a bootstrapped company as well. I mean, as a manager or as the founder, your job is to really do the same thing for not just the developers working for you, but also the other people who are working in your company. So whether they're on the marketing team or you have hired somebody to do copywriting, your job is to essentially remove obstacles for them so that they can become more productive. And whether you perform those tasks yourself in order to remove the obstacles, or you empower them to remove the obstacles themselves, either way, that has to be done. You don't want to have people who are going to run into an obstacle and then either be really hampered in their ability to get work done and not have any mechanism for taking care of it, or not have somebody that they can turn to get those problems taken care of for them. I think moving the furniture also applies to allowing your customers to use your product more effectively. And then this goes back a little bit into communicating with your customers, but you want to identify ways to get them better results. And those better results are going to allow them to do their job more effectively. They're going to make those people who are users look better to their existing employers and essentially want to use your product more. And they will talk about it. So those are all things that kind of fall under this umbrella of moving the furniture. It's more about making sure that everybody on your team is operating it at as high a level as they possibly can, and at the same time, still not burning themselves out while doing it.
Yeah, it's a really interesting duality where you have to both be removing obstacles and making decisions, but also being able and willing to ask for help and delegate to your team. So you're both taking things from them and giving them out. And that's a struggle I think that might befall you in the early days, is you think that you might, removing obstacles involves you doing everything and taking everything onto your list, or you might over-delegate the other way and not be removing enough. And I think that the idea here of removing obstacles tends to be making decisions, setting game plans. It doesn't tend to be, well, give me that, I'll just write the copy, or I'll just write the code, right? It's not taking the task over, but it's kind of taking over the decision process, or if there's like a key intro that needs to be made that you have, or there's some roadblock that really you're going to be the best at fixing without actually doing all the kind of technical work, that's really what we're talking about here. Other interesting thing is my dad was an electrician, and then he became a foreman, and over years became a general foreman, and then he was a project manager, so he was kind of just rising up. And then at some point, he was an executive project manager, managing multiple project managers. And what he told me, because I asked him, like, what's the difference? And A, he said being a foreman was the most fun because you had this small team, and you could think just out a week, and you were really building stuff, and it was so cool. He said the higher up that you go, all you hear about are fires. Like, you hear about all the things that are going wrong, because when things are going right, everyone's doing their job and they're able to move forward. You're only going to hear about the roadblocks. You're only going to hear about the problems and the trouble. And so that takes some getting used to, coming from being able to build stuff with kind of your own two hands to then making that mindset shift of your day is just basically filled with your good people not being able to overcome things. So they're always going to be challenging problems that are brought to you if you have built a good team. You got to start to enter into that mindset as you move forward, because as you said, moving the furniture, removing roadblocks, it's not necessarily always an easy job because you have to make decisions without complete information. And that's perhaps like the best description I can think of someone who's running a team, is you almost never have all the information you need to make the decision, and you just have to learn to make it so that people can move forward.
And sometimes moving the furniture is as simple as just making sure that people don't have to stop to come ask you for a decision. Sometimes you can just say, hey, if a decision needs to be made here, just go ahead and make it. And I've actually found that with contractors, they have a very hard time with this concept, because I don't think that most of them are used to being trusted in such a way. Most of them want to stop what they're doing if they get to a point where they don't know how to proceed, and they will basically stop all work and come to you and say, hey, what do I do here? And it's like, well, just make a decision. And you have to kind of set that culture, that expectation with them. And then another instance where I've run into this is where if somebody needs something, whether it's a piece of software or they want to purchase a service that will help make their lives easier and more productive, then just giving them access to the company credit card is a mechanism to prevent them from having to come ask you for permission to use it. And you just say, kind of give them a blanket statement, hey, if it costs less than X dollars, just go ahead and do it, and then I will reimburse you for it. So if you don't want to give them access to the credit card, you can just say, hey, I will reimburse you for anything up to $50 if you decide to go do it. So that's another mechanism for handling that. And the last area where a bootstrapper should focus on is finding good talent. And I think finding good talent is probably one of the more difficult pieces out of all of these, because it's not just you doing it. When it comes to doing strategic planning or communicating, you're the one who is essentially doing that work. You're pushing out emails, you're sending instant messages to people, or you're having those meetings. When it comes to finding talent, essentially you are searching for other people and trying to identify whether or not they're going to be a good fit for not just you and the way that you manage people, but also for your team. And are they going to be a good fit to integrate with the team based on their own working style? And that can be very difficult to figure out. And there's a couple of different aspects to it. One is how they have essentially gone through their career, what their career arc has looked like. Are they early on in their career? Are they much more entrenched in the things that they've done? Are they able to pick up new things or not? And another thing that I think that most people don't really think a lot about is whether or not the person you're bringing on is for a short-term need or for a long-term need. And I think that they're depending on which of those two things you're hiring for, whether you're hiring a contractor because you have a very specific set of things that you need accomplished and you know that it's probably going to be a short-term need that, you know, they'll be there for 2 or 3 months and that's it, or you want to try and identify somebody that you can keep around for the next 2, 3, 5 years. Those are two entirely different situations. And depending on which one you're trying to do is going to influence a lot of the different ways that you handle that particular situation and you go through the hiring process. And the other flip side of that is being able to balance the talent that you're hiring with the cash flow of the business, because you're not always going to be in a position where you have the money on hand to be able to hire somebody. And there are going to be times probably where you have to hire somebody and you don't quite have the money yet. So you might be operating at a little bit of a loss cost for the business, which I think for most bootstrap businesses is kind of unusual. When we put this list together, one of the things that we thought about including was the idea of cash flow as a element of itself. But for a funded company, that tends to be more of a focus of the CEO because they're operating at such a huge deficit every month or every year. With a bootstrap company, you typically don't do that because you don't have a lot to work with to begin with. But still, when you're going out and you're hiring somebody, you still have to make sure that you have the cash on hand, because the last thing you want to do is lure somebody away from their current job, hire them, and then have to let them go in 3 weeks because you made a bunch of mistakes in your own business. I mean, it's really not fair to make them pay the price for your mistakes, but inevitably that's what's going to happen if you don't pay attention to your cash flow.
Yeah, hiring is a big topic. Obviously, we could dedicate a lot of time to it, but the bottom line is there's a lot that plays into hiring. It's hard to find good people. When you find them, keep them around. The best folks that I've worked with, I plan to work with for many, many years. And I think it's interesting you brought up the cash flow aspect of it, because as a bootstrapper, you do need to be careful. It's pretty easy to hire ahead of cash flow and to suddenly have some bill that comes up, like tax day comes and you get a bill for 20 grand or something that you didn't count on. And suddenly you could find yourself in a pretty tough position. And if you've hired right up to the point where, think about your revenue, if you're making 20, 30 grand a month in revenue, and you hire right up to that point, it can be tough if you do get any type of unexpected occurrence and you don't kind of have a backstop, because you really don't want to be laying people off, especially in the early days, because it's stressful. So this is definitely one of the things that you're going to need to spend a lot of time on. And it's something that I have never seen delegated well. Like, as the founder, as the bootstrapper, trying to delegate this to someone else, I think would be a real mistake. So to recap, our five high leverage areas bootstrappers should focus on are: number one, strategic planning; number two, communicating; number three, researching and testing marketing channels; number four, moving the furniture; number five, finding good talent. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.